Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Keeper Sarah Code, and we're keeping it geekly with our new guest, George O'Connor. We're here to break down Charlie Spot and everything in between. This was one hell of a read. I read issues 1 through 4. It was like 90 pages altogether, and I was left, grabbing my chest. I had to like take a couple deep breaths, go outside, like get some sun on me. Man, this was a roller coaster of emotion.
Excellent, then we did our job.
George, before we dive into that, you know, let's kind of pump the brakes a little bit and start off with who you are and how you got into creating comics.
Absolutely. So the superhero origin story is started as a musician. I still am a musician. So, you know, for God, at this point, over 30 years, I've been making music that way. And somewhere along the line, started to do more, getting into acting, doing plays, that type of thing, and then getting into short films. And this was right around the time of Good Will Hunting hitting. So there's the whole, you know, especially being in Boston, that movie hits and Ben and Matt, you know, become Ben and Matt. And their story was they weren't getting hired. So they wrote themselves a movie so they could play the roles they wanted to play.
And yeah, I love that so much too.
I was very much inspired by that. So I started writing. That led to tapping into an incredible like indie Boston film scene where I helped create over 60 short films over like a 10 year period, doing everything from writing, directing.
Just casually saying.
it was a very motivated group. It was a motivated group, and I really liked this stuff.
How long was that? Like over just not to interrupt. Like how many was that? Like in a year or a course of years?
Over 10 years.
Okay, yeah, that's still a lot. Yeah. That's still a lot. Holy crap!
Yeah. Yeah. And again, it was a great collective where, you know, it could be my short that I wrote and directed and, you know, everybody was helping me. And the next weekend I'm moving boxes for somebody else, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was just, it was to make the thing and to learn and to make it as good as possible and have as good a time as possible as well. Like take it very seriously, but make sure that we still love each other by the end of the shoot. Which is something I've tried to carry forward since then. So those short films turned into a digital series, a web series called 664, The Neighbor of the Beast. In about 2.5 years, we shot 2 seasons of that, like 26 episodes total. Yeah, it was a lot of work. And wrote all of them, directed all of them, edited 22 out of the 26 episodes.
Oh my God.
It was an incredible learning experience. Just DIY, you know, just proudly DIY, you know. I look back at it as like you get to watch us grow as creators because we kind of shoot them in chunks. You know, we shoot like 2 or 3 episodes. You know, they were 5-7 minutes each. So we'd shoot 2 or 4 over a weekend and then I'd edit them and we'd learn. So you could see like the first chunk, we're like, we don't need lights. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that next chunk is like, it's lit because we learned. But it was fantastic. It was a ton of fun. But I was chasing my tail for 2.5 years. I was writing so we could shoot, so I could edit, so we could write, so I could edit, so we could shoot, you know, for all that. And it's a lot of herding cats. And so when we finished the second season of 664, which is still up on YouTube if anybody wants to check it out, I was like, all right, I think I need a break from directing, writing, that type of thing. Because I was just, the tank was empty. I've only directed one thing since then. So the tank is still a little empty on that side. But around that time was the rise of San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And, you know, always been a geek. You know, I read comics as a kid when my older brother, who's 9 years older than me, he was going to the shop and he was bringing his, you know, younger brothers along with him. When he moved out to California, the weekly ride was gone. And so I kind of fell off, but I'm a geek at heart. So I was always keeping an eye on it. So seeing the energy around San Diego Comic-Con, specifically, I remember it being the 2007 San Diego Comic-Con. I'm watching reports and it would start on Thursday. I was like, I think I want to go to Comic-Con. And by Sunday, it's like, we're going to Comic-Con. And so 2008 was the first time I went to San Diego. And that really got me back into comics and, mm-hmm. and that type of thing. And it was very specifically, I remember it was sitting in an Oni panel and it was called How Not to Break into Comics, and which is fantastic. And I think those lessons are just as important in how to break into mm-hmm. comics. But I remember sitting there, you know, again, still burnt out from 664 shoot and realizing, oh, comics is a creative form. Like you can do it DIY. You can do it dirty. You can get it out there for people to find. And if you hook up with the right artist, you can do whatever you want. Like, you know, with short film, especially like on the DIY level, kind of like the belief is like, you know, you write what you can shoot, mm-hmm. meaning like, don't write a pirate movie if you don't have access to a pirate ship.
Yep.
Because, you know, now you've got a script and you can't do anything with it. So 664, 80% of that was shot at my house because we could do that. But sitting through this panel, like, oh, we could do an epic space opera if you find the right artist to collaborate with.
It's like Pandora's box opened up almost.
100%. And so, you know, I want to put that spring of 09 was New York Comic Con. And I was sitting there with my friend Griffin, who's an artist. We had been friends for like close to 10 years up to that point. And we just started kicking around ideas because I'm still very much like an 8-year-old who gets very excited about new things and wants to try them all. Like if I have a superpower, it's I have stayed curious, you know, all through the years. And, you know, which leads to doing web series, which leads to doing podcasts, which leads to doing comics. It looks like fun. I want to try it because it looks like fun. And so Griffin and I were kicking around ideas very soon after. And we kind of brainstormed a bunch. But the one we kept going back to was the first comic that we had created together, which is called Healed. And it's What Would Happen Tomorrow If All Life-Threatening Disease and Illness Went Away Today. Which, ooh. You know, was a much more fun thought exercise, like, 13 years ago, you know, versus, you know.
Yeah.
But Griffin was down to give sequential art a shot. And we ended up doing the first issue and went to our first Boston Comic-Con. And like, you know, we made some copies and we're like, let's see if anybody finds it interesting. And enough people that weekend found the idea interesting that we kept going. And Healed ended up being 5 issues long. And then we wanted to do something a little less heady, a little less deep. And by that time we'd been going to conventions for about 3 years and we saw like there were kids comics and there were adult comics, but not a lot of comics where both kids and adults could enjoy them at the same time. Like you're not mm-hmm. talking down to the kids. But you're still putting stakes in there. You're still putting characters and emotion and arcs and all of that stuff. And so we came up with this idea called Baby, which is kind of like our take on the monster from the deep destroying the city, except our monster is a little corgi lizard who accidentally stumbles upon Atlantic City and destroys it in the cutest way possible. You know, while teaching us valuable lessons about never giving up on our hopes and dreams. And that was, again, we wanted to do something fun, mm-hmm. But still had a story to it. And so we did that. And then that led to other collaborations for me. Silent Night, which is kind of our story about, well, what does Santa Claus do with the rest of his year? And we believe, obviously, that he would be a private detective using his Santa powers to help find lost children.
Okay.
So he's kind of our crime-fighting, crime-noir Santa Claus. And I did that with artist Dafu Yu and colorist Leslie Atlansky. Did an anthology called Great Zombies in History, which was a blast to do. Mm-hmm. My story is about the Lost Roanoke colony down in Virginia and how it really got wiped off the map. And then that led to two things that kind of came out, two of my pandemic babies. One was Toddlerpocalypse, which from a parental side, you know, my son's 13 now. But since he was young, like we always knew how in a real like zombie apocalypse, how he would get us killed. And that is like, he would never stay quiet long enough to like let the danger pass by. Mm-hmm. So myself and my friend Diana Porter, we kicked around this idea of, well, let's take all of these apocalyptic scenarios, turn them on their head and show how, you know, from a parental viewpoint and with, you know, tongue in cheek, heart on sleeve, how our kids are going to get us killed.
Dude, like
apocalypse.
For real, I've bounced that around several times. Like where, like if that was to happen, because I have three kids, I have one's turning 11, I have a 6-year-old, I have a 4-year-old. Like how hard that would be in an actual zombie apocalypse, because they're either going to sneeze, they're gonna cry, they're gonna cough.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we're dead. Like
yeah, and so like I said, tongue in cheek and everything, but it was also a fun way to explore things. Like, man, kids get freaked out and not freaked out by the weirdest thing.
Or they think it's cool. They'll see like a zombie eating eyeball, like, oh, that's awesome. Like,
right. But then you show them, hey, look, there's a spider in the corner and it's game over.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? So we did that. And then the other one was what brings us here today, Charlie Spot. And you know, the log line for Charlie Spot is a homeless veteran has his prize busking spot in the city park stolen from him. And he has to go through an increasingly ridiculous adventure around the city and the evil suburbs to figure out who stole his spot and how he can get it back. And like you were talking about, I can't remember if the cameras were rolling or not. If we've done our job right, you're gonna, you know, we'll have you laughing on one page and then in the most loving way possible, rip your heart out on the next. Mm-hmm. Very much inspired by things like Strangers in Paradise from Terry Moore, and very much inspired by Scotty Young's Middle West, which was a book that I fell in love with instantly. And so many times I would get to a page of his and just have to stop, you know, with one word, one mm-hmm. panel, that type of thing, where like we were having fun right before the page turned, you know, and now we're having existential crises. So we wanted to do that as kind of like, you know, an artistic calling card, or, you know, what we wanted to do. And along the way, I got so freaking lucky to get connected with Meredith Laxton, who is the artist and co-creator on it. She brought so much heart and humanity to this book that is very ridiculous at times, mm-hmm. on purpose. But the way she brought it to life keeps it grounded and keeps the most ridiculous moments real. You know, and then again, when it's time to break your heart, she breaks your heart. And she was a dream collaborator to work with. If you read the book, if anybody reads the book, again, dream collaborator, if you like how the book ended, you can thank Meredith. If you get to the end and you stop reading at page 18 of the fourth issue, that's where I thought the story ended. And I was very proud of myself. I'm like, this is a good ending. I did good. Pat, pat, pat. And she read it. It's like, it's good, but what if we did this? And I'm like, that's the ending of this book. Mm-hmm. You know, it took everything I was trying to do and magnifying it 5-10 times, you know, to really bring it home. So again, like, you know, dream collaborator, and then bringing the rest of it to life. Our colorist, Ali Pepitone, was a tremendous influx of energy. Like Meredith and I had been working on it for probably a year and a half or 2 years, you know, enough to kind of hit the enthusiasm's over. Now it's work, and yeah, it's fun work and we're passionate about it. But, you know, it's kind of hit that bottom of like it's work, you know. Mm-hmm. She came in so excited to be working on it. And kind of like that great reminder of like, right, this is fun. Like, you know, this is a good story. We got something good here, worthy of our energy and enthusiasm. And then when it came time to letter it, my original plan was to letter it. Like, I'm fine. I will never win an Eisner, but I also won't be the reason you throw a book away in disgust. But I was watching what Meredith was doing and how she was elevating everything. Allie was elevating everything. I was working with my friend and editor, Rich Duick, and he was taking the scripts and he was finding nice little ways to like make everything better. So I was like, so everybody's elevating this and I'm going to do fine lettering on it. It felt like going 95 yards, 5 yards away from the end zone and going, we're good. So when I was thinking about, all right, who to bring on to letter this, Taylor Esposito was absolutely the guy. I mean,
phenomenal letter. Yeah.
Any Wednesday you go to your local comic shop and he's going to be on a bunch of different titles. You know, and he's been doing it forever. He's teaching it, you know. Mm-hmm. So the guy, he's a total pro. He knows what he's doing. But what really sold it is I was at a local convention, just walking around, seeing who else is there, and another local creator's there. And I looked at his book, and Taylor had lettered it. And so I was like, all right, let me check this out. And the same lettering, you know, he would give DC, Dynamite, IDW, all these people, that same quality and professionalism was in this, you know, hey, I made 25 copies of this and I'm selling it at this local show book. And that to me was like, all right, this is the guy I want to work mm-hmm. with, because every project matters to him. And so that was the freaking dream team that brought all of it together.
I love that. We have Alan863 joining us on Twitch saying hello. Good morning. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully I pronounced that right. If I didn't, feel free to give me the correct pronunciation. So let's bounce it back a little bit. I love Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. Like, the Good Will Hunting story is so inspirational, how they just kept getting denied. And then they're like, you know, screw it, we're going to do this ourselves. And a big part of Keeping It Geekly kind of is like that too, like where I really wanted to, you know, at first I had a podcast called Talk Geekly that was taken from me. And then I remember I wanted to get involved with other podcasts, and you know, I kind of had Keeping It Geekly, but it wasn't really doing its thing. And then I was like, screw it, I'm gonna do this myself. And then that's what kind of created this. It's like that, like, motivation and, you know, inspiration, just to fuel yourself and drive yourself, you know, it serves as such great momentum. And I love to hear that, you know, right at the first start of the interview, because like that story is just so great. So Charlie Spot, it was one interesting read. I, you know, had the opportunity to read issues 1-4, and there's a lot that I kind of took away from this, you know, things such as like not judging a book by its cover, because Charlie, you know, he's homeless, but he's not living on the street. You know, I took away other things too, you know, just how you should treat individuals and why individuals may react the way they react when pushed upon or pressured upon. There's a lot of, like, you know, because on the surface level, this feels like a humorous comic, but there's just so much emotion and rawness, you know. I think, let me ask this, as someone who, you know, a vet who left his family because he didn't want to bring the trauma onto them, and is homeless, is selling paintings in the park, what type of paintings would he be creating? You know, because that serves as his way, his therapy from PTSD. Yeah. Like, what type of paintings would he be doing?
I think Meredith answered this beautifully. So it was originally published through CEX Publishing. And when they were going to the direct market, they were kicking around, or they were hoping for some variant covers. Mm-hmm. And Meredith had this idea of what if she were to paint what she thought Charlie's paintings looked like. And if you check out the we're calling them the variant B covers, you will see Meredith's actual paintings that she kind of interpreted from that Charlie would do. And so it's painting the people around him, mm-hmm. but with subtle tones of like what they mean to him. And you know, I'm trying to think of the quickest way to do it, but if you go to the Charlie Spot Kickstarter page, if anything, to just look at those cover Bs, there's one that is a self-portrait that, you know, again, Meredith interpreting how this would be. It's mm-hmm. a self-portrait of Charlie painting himself. And there's a coffee ring in like the bottom right corner.
I love that so much.
I saw that. I was like, oh, that's a cool touch. And I had mentioned it, and Meredith's like, yeah, I think he's the type of guy that thinks so little of himself that after he painted it, he wouldn't think twice about putting his own coffee mug on his own painting about himself. When she told me that, I floored me. Absolutely floored me, right? Because it takes this nice little atmospheric bit, but puts so much weight into it. So much backstory into that. And, you know, if anything, I just want to tell that story again to like, look, this is the artist. This is the thinking of the artist who took this from, you know, a Word doc onto the page. Like that care thinking, that next level thinking is the type of stuff that went into it. You know, so yeah, Meredith is an absolute powerhouse.
And that's how you know they're involved and they're passionate about the project as well, when they're really getting immersive. I mean, that coffee ring is such an awesome touch. There's a friend I have, Richard Fairgray. He does immersions like that as well, where he had this one book called Octopus, where you could see like the bleed pages. There was like when you were flipping through, there was like tape with like a cat hair in it that was like, you know, photocopied on. And it's like that is like next level stuff that like really just sucks you into it.
Makes it real.
Like it grounds it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So I really, really loved Charlie's character. And, you know, I think there's a, you know, I don't really know how to put words to this. Like, you wonder why he left his family. But I think as a father, you know why. Like, it's hard to explain. Like, you don't want to bring that trauma to your family. And it's not just trauma you can dump on your doorstep. It's not just trauma that you can leave. Like, there's a lot of, you know, I remember working really shit jobs and coming home and having to unwind like an hour after work because I didn't want to bring any sort of stress snap on my kids or anything. And like, what he's bringing home from the Gulf War is next level. I mean, what went into carrying, you know, creating this character that has just such depth and hurt to him?
One, thank you. I'm really glad that came through, because you're right. This is a humorous book. Like there are humor points to it, but like at no point it's like, we can't make the homeless vet the butt of the joke. Like that's not funny. Yeah. That's mean. So, you know, let's take this grounded character and just put this ridiculous surrounding him. So I'll try and like do the long story short. I worked in downtown Boston for 10 years, took the exact same route the entire time. And I would see, again, I don't know if they were homeless or what their situation were, but I do know for 10 years, you know, spring, summer, fall, winter, there's this group of individuals were kind of in the same place all, you know, 365 for 10 years. And after a while, it's like, well, how do you get that spot? Right? Like they're always there and they're always there and they're always there. Like there's got to be some system set up. And so, you know, you just start kicking that around because, you know, you're on the train board. But then the other thing, then what hit me is like, oh, hold on a second. I'm the interloper. I come in, I do my job, I go home. These people live here. This is their home. This downtown Boston area, this is their home. So there's an entire society going on. There's a whole ecosystem that for a while I thought I was above. I was the interloper. Like, you know, and so that kind of got me curious about this hidden world, this hidden society that we don't see.
Yeah.
Because it's not where we live. You know, we think it is, right? Like we think we have some ownership over it, but we really don't. You know, we're like I said, we're interlopers. So that was kind of the question that I started with. Like, what is this behind the, you know, when I leave, what's going on here? Going with the homeless vet angle felt like, okay, that's a quick way to like get into the story, right? Like we've got enough stories in the world that we can kind of shorthand that. But at the same time I was putting that together, I came across two different shows with a very short amount of time, like within a couple weeks of each other, that use the homeless vet has gone crazy and is shooting people up gimmick. And one time like was like, eh, all right, We've seen it. But like two times in 2 weeks on two different shows, I'm like, that's cliched and that's easy. And it's also wrong. It's just wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, my dad served. I've got friends who served. And while they may be dealing with what they're dealing with, they're not a threat and they are not a danger. And that is the vast majority of people who serve, who see some shit and come back, right? They might have things they need to work through, but they are not a threat. And so this idea of like every vet who saw a thing is just, you know, like one bad day away from shooting up, you know, the five and dime or whatever. Five and dime, that's a weird pull for me to use. But anyways, I had bank of like, no, go with five and dime. I'm like, why? All right. Anyways. So that made me even more protective of Charlie. Like, if I'm going to do this, right, if I'm going to take this shorthand, I got to do it with respect. I got to do it with care. And I got to think about this. And whatever led him there has got to feel a little more universal. And I think we have all gone through patches where we think whatever is wrong with us, that it's probably why we're kind of like maybe not worthy of friendship or love, or like, man, I am just making everybody else's life worse. And it would probably be better if I left, you know, if I wasn't here. You know, whether that's the little wasn't here or the big wasn't here.
Mm-hmm.
So when I was thinking about Charlie, that's where it went from. It was from a very empathetic place of feeling, of those moments where like that's that voice in your head wins and it's wrong. I mean, that's the other thing, is like that voice in your head is wrong.
Yeah.
But he feels he is so broken that it would hurt his family that he clearly loves. It would hurt more to stay around than to leave. They would have a better life if he took his trauma and his issues and left.
You know, and that in itself too is just hard to think about. Like, you know, because you do have the sperm donors who, you know, when they get someone pregnant, they run. They're not ready to be a father, so they leave. But to leave your family because you don't want to hurt your family, that's a different level.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and it kind of informs why the way he is, you know, kind of like the thesis of this is, you know, can we ever get to a point where we're too broken to be loved or to be helped? And so, you know, I wanted to start with a character who, he thinks for the betterment of everybody, like he's just going to put some walls up, right? He's not pushing. Well, I guess he is kind of pushing people away. He's not aggressive. He's just built a life where like the only person he can really affect is himself, because he doesn't want to hurt anybody else. And then my favorite thing, as a creator, is to take normal people and put them in ridiculous situations and see what happens. And so that's what we do. You know, he is forced to interact with the people around him on a deeper level, so he can go on a journey and he can test his hypothesis. Is it better that I put up these walls to protect people, or is it actually better if I let people in? And, you know, to answer that thesis, we put him on an absolutely ridiculous adventure with jugglers and dancers and hula hoopers and someone in a bear suit.
And police officers, this thing gets insane. Yep. We have like a corporate woman who tries to turn homeless people into a pyramid scheme at some point. This gets wild. You know, why start? You know, Charlie is he's in a spot right now. Why give him a heart attack? Like just a couple pages into it.
I mean, you know, inciting incident, right? Like, you know, the classic, like you take a character, you know, in their normal state, and then you shake it up. You know, if you're happy, if the character's happy at the beginning, well, we got to break them real quick. And I love sad, we gotta, you know, we just gotta shake him out. Like his life is what it is, and he thinks like, okay, this is fine. This is what it is. And then, you know, like you said, I like taking people and shaking up their world. You know, 664 was about taking a normal suburban house, you know, husband and wife, and moving them next door to Satan. Mm-hmm. And let's see what happens.
Yeah. So Satan's supposed to be cool, supposedly. I mean,
supposedly.
So, you know, this was interesting as well. That heart attack served as like a catalyst almost, because Charlie really got to see, you know, who some of his true friends was without really realizing it. We got Andre in there paying for all his medical bills, which was amazing. You know, even though Andre doesn't want to squat down to mess up his suit, you know, we see eventually that he does. That eventually, you know, he lowers that, you know, that whatever image he has of himself and gets down and dirty with Charlie. And I just loved how that friendship developed. We have like bum fights going on at some point in this as well. Like, this is one hell of a ride. I think right now would be a perfect segue. Let's go ahead and head over to the Kickstarter and we'll check out some of these tiers.
Thank you, man. Yeah. So the story behind the story, like I've talked ad nauseum about the comic Charlie spot, but the reason we're on a Kickstarter is it's kind of like a good thing, bad thing. The good thing is that we sold out of the first issue, both variant covers, which is fantastic. The problem is I still got a bunch of twos, threes, and fours. Mm-hmm. So to make sure, one, that I'm financially responsible, not only as a creator, but, you know, as somebody who, you know, has a family, you know, mm-hmm. who likes going out to eat every now and then and having a mortgage paid. It didn't make sense to throw away all of these, you know, back issues. Mm-hmm. So we needed to reprint the first issue. So like I said, we could keep this story together. So that's the story behind the Kickstarter. You know, we are raising mm-hmm. funds to make sure we can keep this comic around. It's bringing this to conventions is incredibly rewarding. People seem to get it, like between the log line, I probably the way I talk about it, and then seeing Meredith, Allie, and Taylor's work on the inside. Mm-hmm. It does well at conventions. And so the idea of not being able to bring this story to find its audience would really bum me out. I've had some killer conversations with people because of this book. So, long story long, that's why we're running the Kickstarter. And I will already say, like, in the 35 minutes we've been talking, that counter has gone up. So,
let's fucking go. In the last 30 minutes,
thank you so much.
Real quick, we do have Hand Grenade over on Twitch on the Jopper Cody side saying, hey, yo, welcome to the stream. How are you doing? And for everyone that is watching, I just dropped the link to the Kickstarter in chat. Check this out with us. If you're able to back, we would love to see that. Simply putting this on Twitter and Facebook, anywhere you can put a link would be greatly just as appreciated as well. 100%. And then let's go ahead and just start diving into this. Yeah. We're looking at Charlie Spot, the complete series. When a homeless veteran loses his prize busking spot, he sets off on a magical, bizarre, and heartfelt adventure to get it back. Currently at $3,117 of a $2,000 goal, 85 backers and 22 days left to go with Project We Love. Congratulations, yeah. George, man. You're killing it right now.
Thank you. Kickstarter is an interesting thing. You wake up usually to like some good news, you know. You go to bed thinking like, oh, okay, we had a pretty good day, and then you wake up 8 hours later and a whole bunch of people have joined you, or all of a sudden you've got that tag that wasn't there mm-hmm. the day before. Yeah, so with the main things that we have on the Kickstarter is you can get the entire series, all four issues. We've got those cover A's by Victor Alpe and Meredith Laxton. The cover B's that I was kind of talking about, the paintings that Meredith mm-hmm. did. And the other thing I want to call out with those cover B's is when you line them all up, it's kind of like an interconnecting cover.
That's so cool.
Where she set it up like it's kind of like a DIY art gallery. Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to call it out. She painted those. She mocked those up. Like that's, I think maybe the Comics Experience logo is the only thing that was added in post. Everything else she created and shot, and you know, so again, all the praise to Meredith. And then because I do have a wonderful support system that, you know, has did pre-order these books. You know, again, as small creators from a starting out publishing company, it's tough to get eyeballs, but mm-hmm. I've got a nice group, an incredible group of people who did pre-order it. Some shop owners who did tell their customers about it. So for the people who already have all 1 through 4, but do want to support us, we created a brand new variant one cover by Fernando Pinto and Ellie Wright, who is the visual creative team behind the new project I'm working on.
Ooh.
So not only am I having an absolute blast working with Fernando and Ellie on this new project, I thought this would be a cool way to introduce like the Charlie Spot audience to Fernando and Ellie, because they're gonna be the core of the next thing that I launch.
That's so cool. That is so cool. So let's take a real quick look at some of these interiors. This is 3 weeks after Charlie's heart attack. So we see him. We see Andre right here giving him a hug. Glad to see that he's back. And things have changed. You know, there's people in his spot. There's a clown and a bear getting in a fight. You know, what's going on? And he is, you know, and I really love, you were talking earlier how you didn't want that, you know, that visual of like a homeless man just like going crazy for no reason. So I loved how you kind of set this up, you know, and at the end, you truly understand why he is so just hell bent on getting this spot back. But you do a good job of setting up the exposition to show why he's so, you know, in the beginning, like why he goes to the lengths he does. I mean, he doesn't lose his cool completely, but he starts to, and you see what leads to that. And it kind of opens up your mind, like, you know, maybe the average person that you're dealing with is probably just going through some shit. I think we're all going through some shit, and it's kind of how you handle it yourself. Like, you know, I don't know, maybe the person that lashed out at you for no reason at the restaurant just had someone die in their family, or maybe they just had a heart attack a few weeks ago, you know. And I think you do a good job of opening up these questions while reading this. I like, you know, it is a humorous comic at heart, but there are some really good, you know, questions to be asked.
Thank you, man. Yeah, it was the I don't know, degree of difficulty I gave myself was, can I write a story about an adventure where you're not 100% sure what the character wants?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, he wants his spot back. We make that abundantly clear. But if we've done our job right, you're like, yeah, he wants his spot back, but there is something else. Like, you know, it's a busking spot in a city park. Why this 2-foot by 2-foot slab of concrete?
Mm-hmm.
This specific, like, why can't you just move down 6 feet? Why can't you move to the other side of the park? And so that was the degree of difficulties. Can I keep some of the magic in the back pocket, but create a story that pulls you in, that you're willing to go on the adventure of?
I also love the shout out to Ohio here. Ohio love myself. So it was awesome to see that sweater right there.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So let's talk a little bit about the collaboration side of things. I mean, you are the writer, co-creator of this series. What goes into like the mental side of things, you know, balancing co-creation with another person?
Letting go, you know, you are working the royal you. You're working with experts at their field. I will never be as visually educated as Meredith. I will never understand color theory as well as Allie. I will never be able to letter and understand the mechanics of lettering the way Taylor does. So what I have found brings out the best collaborations is, one, go in as a collaboration. I've learned I am a collaborator, not a director, not a dictator. I also love working with other creative people. My favorite thing is throwing out the kernel of an idea and seeing somebody else get excited about it and go, oh, well, what if? And then that energy starts bouncing around. And at the end of it, if it all goes well, you've got something bigger than the original idea. And that has you, for me, it's like if the hair's standing up, then that's like, okay, that's something. And that it's bigger than your original idea. It's better than your original idea. And you're more excited to work on it. So the way I kind of describe it is, you know, I will paint a target, you know, and say, okay, this is what I'm going for. Here are the guardrails. However, you artist, colorist, letterer, and again, I'm also a musician. However you, drummer, bass player, lead guitar, however you want to hit that target, so long as it's within these guardrails, I don't care. Like, mm-hmm. I do care. I care passionately. But I know the best work will come by giving freedom. You know, and I'm there if something, you know, needs to get a little nudge to the left or to the right. But if it's within those guardrails and it hits the target, that's all that matters. And then the other hope is that the person you're working with now feels a little more invested in it. There's now room for them to put their personality, their talents, their experiences into it and make it their own as well. So again, you know, this, especially comics, it's always going to take twice as long as you think it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
In the best collaborations, it's going to be longer, it's going to be harder, it's going to be more stressful. So my job, you know, you're kind of talking about collaboration. Once like writer George is done, now I'm kind of like project manager cheerleader George.
Yep, you got to wear a lot of hats.
So the point is, how can I keep something that will be inherently stressful as stress-free as possible, as positive as possible? Because that's all we can control.
Mm-hmm.
All I can control is the process of making the thing. You know, whether it's my relationship with Meredith, Ali, Taylor, in this new project with Fernando and Ellie, with my band, you know, it's how can I make this relationship and this project as smooth and fun and positive as possible? Because once that's over, I have no control over it. I have mm-hmm. no control whether one person likes Charlie Spot or a million people likes Charlie Spot. Same thing with us. You know, again, for 30 years, I've been writing songs. I am always shocked at what songs people like, mm-hmm. what songs people don't like, and usually it's the exact opposite of what I thought.
You know, a lot of times where I'll do an episode and, like, you know, the thing about me is, you know, I had a speech delay for years when I was a kid, until I was like 6 or 7, have a huge time with pronunciation. So when you booked, I was like, okay, he has an easy name. This is already off to a smooth sailing start. Nine times out of 10, when I'm feeling like I'm having a horrible podcast, I'll ask at the end, like, how'd you feel about that? And they're like, this was great. I'm like, are you serious? Like, for real?
Yeah.
Like,
again, 30 years of playing on stage. There have been nights where I was like, that went really well. You talk to the people who will tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it wasn't your best show. You know, but for 30 minutes, I was up there and I was feeling it and it felt great, but it didn't translate. And there have been complete shit shows of shows where, like, to a person, the people I trust to tell me the truth, they're like, no, it was great. It was great. It was great. It was great. So I do actually count myself very lucky that early on in, like, my creative development, I learned I have no fucking idea.
Yep.
All I can do is do my best and hopefully elevate and cheerlead the people around me. And after that, it'll be what it'll be.
So let's go ahead and dive into some of these tiers as well. Yeah. We have the $5 for a PDF of issue 1. Outstanding price for that. We have digital PDF of issues 1 through 4 for $15. This is about 90 pages of content, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
So outstanding price for that, guys, as well. You can get $20 or more for the issue 1 Kickstarter variant. This is the only place that it's available at. Yeah. So, guys, make sure to jump on that while you still have the opportunity. $25 or more, you're going to get the physical series of issue 1 through 4, cover A. Wow, dude. Wow. And then the cover B. Same price. That is phenomenal pricing right there on the variants, because these variant covers are gorgeous.
I love them. Like I said, you know, and I feel bad that I end up, like, it's like your kids. It's like, mm-hmm. I love both my kids, but I accidentally end up talking about one over the other.
Yeah.
But again, I treat these covers as their art.
Mm-hmm.
It's what's speaking to you. You know, if the cover A is kind of like the more traditional comic book cover is speaking to you, awesome. It's the exact same story inside. Mm-hmm. If the interconnecting vibe, if the painting vibe connects with you, awesome. You know, it's the same story inside. So mm-hmm. you're getting to treat that cover as art, you know.
At 30 or more, we have the issue one Kickstarter variant and then an enamel pin as well. So, yeah. Dude, I always love merch like that. It's awesome.
I saw some people, like they were making pins for their books, and maybe not the best financial decision, but I was like, I really like those pins. Mm-hmm. I need pins for my books. So now, like, for four series in a row, I've been doing pins. And yeah, we thought our person in a bear suit pin was the most captivating,
mm-hmm.
you know, right off the bat. And so again, that is Meredith's work turned into an enamel pin.
So just $10 more for that pin as well. Awesome yep. price on that. Then the physical series cover A with the pin at $35. You get the physical series cover B with the pin at $35 as well. And then we have at $45 the physical series cover A and then the variant. And then $45 for the cover B with the variant as well. So awesome prices on here. If you can't choose which one you like, $50 or more, you can get both of them. So there's no, you know, no need to decide. You can just have both. 8 comics for $50. That's what, 180 pages. Got me doing math early.
I'm so sorry.
Man, I'm loving these tiers. And then you can throw that pin in there for just 10 extra bucks.
Wow. Like Kickstarter can be overwhelming if you're not used to the ecosystem. So, you know, I was taught, and I do believe, like, make it simple.
Yep.
You know, and build these tiers where it's simple to figure out what you're getting and why it's going up. And then, yeah, now you're kind of into the back catalog part of it. You know, like, I think I've mentioned all the books, you know, I've got, you know, right behind me is, you know, essentially the warehouse. And, you know, all of these books, they live in my basement and they need good homes and bookshelves and nightstands to go to. So I set up a pledge level where you can choose, you know, out of all the back catalog, what you want to dive into from, you know, this first one where you get, you know, the whole run of the Kickstarter Charlie books and then one of the back stock, you know, one of the back catalog, all the way up to, look, if you want everything I have ever written up to this point, I will lovingly and safely in a Gemini mailer get it to you so you can experience everything I have created over the last 13 years with some amazing artists to help bring it together. And then the last thing I wanted to point out is that last one, because I think we only have one left. At the beginning, Meredith was working traditionally. So I have her original pages. And we've got one page left.
Ooh.
From the first, I think, 7 pages of the book.
Mm-hmm.
So you can actually own one of the pages. You know, it's a true one of one from the pages. And so far, 3 people have jumped onto that tier, which, again, thrills me to no end, because you know I've got to look at Meredith's, you know, pencils and inks forever, and I'm psyched to be sending it out there. And again, another reason I love Kickstarter as a platform, one of those pages is going to Norway.
Oh wow, that's, you know, so cool.
And,
yeah,
and without Kickstarter, there's no way I would ever be able to connect with somebody in Norway to, you know, not only show off the book, but, you know, to share Meredith's art with, you know, someone, you know, whatever, a quarter of the way, a third of the way around the world. You know, and that's one of the reasons I keep coming back to Kickstarter. This is my 8th Kickstarter, and I believe in the platform, you know. Again, for connecting directly with people, you know, it's literally going to go from my house, autographed, Gemini mailer, so it gets to you safely, to you.
Sprinkle, you know, a little bit of, like, a holy water on it, you know, say yeah, a little ritual prayer.
Because I care.
Do a solo. So, George, for anyone who might be on the fence about backing, what would you like to say to them to kind of maybe push them over that hump? We just put that link in chat, so guys, be sure to check that out. And like I said, just put it wherever you can. Word of mouth is 100% free. But anyone who might be just teetering right there, what would you say to them directly to kind of just get them to back?
So you're going to get the entire story through this campaign, you know, so you don't have to worry about, well, what if I like it, but I can't find the 4th issue. So you're getting beginning, middle, end all together on this campaign. And like I said, if you like comics, if you like stories that, like I said, will take you on a ride, that will have you laughing, And then, you know, pull at your heartstrings when you least expect it, but when you most need it, then that's where we're at. And I mean, you know, without putting y'all into my heart, I don't know how to tell you how much care and passion and thoughtfulness went into making this book, and the amount of care and empathy and humanity that went into creating these characters. But I love it to death. It's one of the reasons essentially why I'm fighting to make sure that I can keep bringing this book around.
I love it.
You know, if it wasn't working, I'd be like, hey, we tried, let's move on. And this is a situation like, you know, well, we did try, but I'm not done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's why we're here right now. And plus, you could, like I said, you can read a preview of the story on our Kickstarter page. And you can see a preview of all of my books on the Kickstarter page as well. Those are all free to download and check out. Oh, and one last thing. Everybody that backs this week, because Monday was my birthday. Yay.
Happy birthday.
As my birthday gift to everybody else, I'm giving away free digital comics and stories this entire week. If you back before the end of the week, you're going to get 3 extra number ones and 2 extra stories on top of whatever else you want to pick up. We're working towards a $3,500 stretch goal of more comics from Kickstarter people whose books like inspire me and influence me, and I want to introduce, you know, my audience to them and them to my audience. So that's awesome. Like right now your money goes really, really far. You know, even if you're just picking up the number one digital.
That's awesome. We always love to see that. And you mentioned some sort of like secret project. I don't think we really got to uncover too much about that. I mean, what's next for you in 2023? Can we maybe talk about that a little bit?
We can. I will tease it real quick. So we're kind of doing a B-movie sci-fi story called Vampires on Mars.
Ooh.
And all I will leave you with is the tagline. If humans can't survive the trip to Mars, don't send humans. and Fernando is freaking killing it.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I love it. I love it. So George, we are nearing the end of the podcast, and we've hit one of my favorite spots. This is where I get to ask you for a little bit of advice for anyone who is looking to do the same thing that you're doing. So for anyone who is maybe just struggling to get started with writing, what would be the biggest piece of advice you could offer them to kind of help them just get going with it?
You know, seeing the time, I will keep this quick. Allow yourself to suck. Allow yourself to suck.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what stage you are as a creator in whatever medium you're working in, allow yourself to suck. The first draft, its only job is to be done. Then once it's done, then you can go back and you can make it good. Nothing is born perfect. It's work and it's time. And that is and we can control that, you know? So once you get over the idea that the first draft needs to be precious and perfect, it doesn't. Getting it done is so much more valuable than trying to make it perfect.
I love that. Thank you for such sound advice. Last but not least, outside of creating, what are you consuming? You know, video games, if you play, books, comics, movies, TV shows, music, you know, what are you consuming?
So what we just dived into is The Great on Hulu. Tremendous show. Like if you want to talk about emotional whiplashes from something that's funny to something that's like super dark, The Great, their third season just dropped a couple weeks ago. I highly recommend it. I'm going to go through some emotional heartbreak on Sunday as Barry comes to an end.
Yep.
I love Bill Hader and I freaking love Barry. And the sci-fi geek in me can't freaking wait for Foundation to come back on Apple Plus. So off the top of my head, those are 3 shows. Oh, and the Spider-Man Spider-Verse next week.
Oh yeah, you know, that is coming soon.
Can't freaking wait for
God,
that.
God, it's gonna be so
and
good.
Sneaky, one of the best things about having a 13-year-old, a geeky 13-year-old, the kid didn't have a choice. Is now I've got like a movie going buddy in the afternoon.
Yep.
So we'll be father son bonding over that next Thursday.
Hey, and in case, you know, in case we don't get another interview in between, happy Father's Day. That's coming out, what, next month,
you.
I think? Yeah, so awesome.
Also,
always.
And also with you.
Hey, thank you as well. So everyone watching, this has been one hell of an interview. Right there are the links. Check out this Kickstarter. Make it happen today. Charlie Spot is one hell of a ride, and it gets the Geekly seal of approval. I loved it. The end of it really choked me up as well. We were talking backstage about it, and I was just like, damn, dude. I got 3 minutes to get it together before we go live. I need to hurry up and just splash some water on my face. Like, Woo-sah. But it is time for us to wrap up. I hope you all have a lovely, lovely Friday. But most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.